Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 7, delivered on September 12, 2017. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money.
This lecture is The Time Value of Money. The time value of money is one of the most important concepts in early finance, time value of money. And I begin with a question for you, sir. I can give you $100 today or $100 in 1 year. Which do you want? It depends. What would that depend on? You're going to have $100 now, or you can have $100 in a year. You mean it could be worth more in a year than it is now? Maybe, but I mean, how often do you see money, a dollar bill, go up in value in a year? Not in here. So let me try this. Madam, would you prefer $100 now or $100 in a year? It's your choice.
Now.
Yeah, now. There is no ambiguity about that. Money now is worth more than money in a year. That's what we refer to as the time value of money. Money declines in value because you are giving up its immediate consumption. You could have $100 and therefore have a cheeseburger today at Red Robin. That's about the price of one there. Or you could have $100 in a year, and by then you might have starved to death because cheeseburgers don't grow on trees. I wish they did. That's one of the most important concepts in our behavior, is that we want now rather than later. And so in order for us to give up consumption now, we would have to be rewarded. Otherwise, the value of future money in the present is less. That's how we value projects, is by recognizing that the cash flow occurs over time. So we have to telescope those values in the future back to now to see what their now value is. There was a time somewhere in your dark mathematical arithmetic past when you did unit conversions. Inches to centimeters, liters to gallons, whatever. This is actually exactly the same thing, except the formulas are a little bit more complicated. But whenever I turn future dollars into current dollars, I'm just doing a unit conversion. That's all it is at the end of the day. Now, this unit conversion has some variables, some parameters you have to kick into it. Unlike with inches to centimeters, it's always 2.54 centimeters to the inch. But the principle is exactly the same. And one nice thing is the calculators now, you don't have to do these by hand. That used to be a real challenge, just cranking through, especially before there were even calculators, using slide rules and all that. But, okay. I'm going to leave that just for a minute. I'm going to bring up two important principles of finance. And they are a little bit dodgy because they actually don't apply in some circumstances. But the first one is called the valuation principle. The valuation principle is sort of simple. You, sir, what's your value? Give me a number. No one's ever asked you that before?
I mean,
What's the scale? Like,
No. I want to know your value in dollars.
In dollars?
Because I want to buy you. And a couple of other people in here do too. I mean, you're a hot item. Seriously. I mean, that man beard, that's good. Seriously. What?
$3 million.
$3 million. Okay. Okay. Are you going to pay that for him? Well, you know, if you did, would that be what you pay for?
Probably not.
No, I wouldn't either. Okay. You buy something, it has a price. In a competitive market, that price is going to be its value. That price is its value in a competitive market. Because all these competitive forces have done their bidding and their all that kind of stuff, and the market is clearing for that item at that price. Well, that's undervalued or that's overvalued. Show me why.
Well, this stock right here is undervalued right now. That's a great thing.
How could it be undervalued when you have millions of traders, computers faster than any human on earth, screens on all these brokers and dealers telling them everything possible about it? How could it not have the value that is the price? This is the principle we have to abide by. Unless you can show me that there is some fundamental, persistent market defect, the price is the value. The price is the value.
Well, I'm underpaid.
Well, how has that happened? Is there some defect in this market that just doesn't recognize the awesomeness that is you? By the way, right now, current value, what we would do to find a value is we take the present value of the future expected cash flows. In other words, we look at all of the cash stream, what we call the annuity of your life's cash flows, and we would bring those back, each of them, to the present value. The ones farther in the future are worth less than the ones closer, and we would telescope those back, add them up. That would be your value. If I can buy you for less, that would be great. But in a competitive market, that's probably not going to happen because everyone else who's astute at doing this would do it too. Current value of a person, actually this kind of has some importance to you because if you buy life insurance, that life insurance should reflect the present value of your remaining future cash flows in your life. So we would say, right now, the U.S., I believe the U.S. Army puts the value of a soldier life insurance policy, I think it's $6 million. It used to be more, but now it's about $6 million. That would be someone who was about 20 years old, what that person's present value of future expected cash flows in his life would be. That's his value. That would be the value of the life insurance policy. If you were to project your income stream over your life, it would go up as you develop more skills, as you had seniority, and then it would drop down in your retirement years. Taking those back to the present, for a person in your situation, college educated, probably around, I'm thinking about $10 to $12 million in current terms. But of course, as you go further into your life, you're going to be closer to the higher ones, but you're also going to have fewer out here. So your life value would be changing through your life. And so when you buy insurance, you would buy what would be the value of your remaining life in present value. The valuation principle simply says that in a competitive market, the price is the value. That's all there is to it. The price is the value. Yeah?
The question of valuation. Let's say that a person had worked for a company for 15 years, and looking back over what they started at and where they are now, adjusted for inflation, their salary has increased, their value of the company has increased.
Has or has not?
Has. Because they gained more experience, they know the product better.
Sure.
So does it apply there as well? Is it an independent market? Are you saying if they leave that company and get a job somewhere else, that their value would equal their price?
That, yes. As a matter of fact, I got a story about this, and it might even apply to you. Interestingly enough, I think I mentioned this. A few years back, I took my club students down to St. Louis. They didn't want to go to St. Louis. They wanted to go to Chicago. But I took them to a company. It's actually, you would recognize the name of the company. It's Travelers Insurance. And the general manager down there, he wanted to see my students. He wanted to explain to them that this particular division of Travelers Insurance isn't insurance. It's credit risk pricing, finance, pure finance. And they go through, and my students went there and they listened very attentively. He explained, well, you're going to go through this long period of training and you're going to be doing things like you're going to be walking on scaffolds, you're going to maybe be standing on a barge, you're going to learn how to look at risk and see what the price of that is. What's exposure? That way our insurance people can figure out what premiums to charge these companies that have these risks. He explained something interesting during the conversation. He said, for 18 months, we're going to lose money on you. Lots of money. Only after about 18 to 24 months will you begin to be worth what we're paying you. And then, as time goes on further, you will become worth a lot because you will get this experience. You'll know what to look for, what they're trying to hide from you maybe, what could be a risk that no one might imagine is a risk. You'll become worth a great deal more after about 18 months. Now, interestingly enough, one of the presenters kind of got a wry grin on his face, and he said, yeah, and that's when our competitors are going to hire you away from us. Of course, because once you've gone through that period when you're negative net present value, then suddenly you become worth it. They can hire you at a salary that jumps our salary by quite a bit because your value has suddenly jumped. Now, of course, the company that we were with, they said, we've still got to recover our costs of training you like this. So we couldn't jump your salary like that until we've recovered your costs. So they're at a competitive disadvantage. Once you've got that 18, 24 months under your belt, suddenly some company can go up to you and say, would you like to work for us for $125,000 a year? And you look at that compared to your salary with Travelers, yeah, bye. No loyalty there, simply because it has to do with that glitch, that jump in the system. That's not a market defect at all. It's just part of the competitive environment. So, of course, a company like Travelers has to have a higher salary than it probably should for you, simply because of that possibility that you will be robbed. They will be robbed of you down the line.
That's what non-competes are for.
Say that again?
That's what non-competes are for.
Yeah, the non-competes are definitely for that, and there are definitely very easy ways around non-competes. You were a credit risk analyst at Travelers. Well, I'm going to hire you as a marketing person, and then I'm going to have you do credit risk analysis. Obviously, I mean, the games with that are amazing. Non-competes do have some force, but a company that wants you, because you have all the training, you are now into positive net stream in your skill set. Yeah, I'll find a way to get my hands on you and away from them. This is actually fairly common in the industry. You're going to be a negative loss, a net loss to companies for your first couple of years. We know that. Productivity among people just out of college is actually very low. What we do know, though, oddly enough, is that by the age of 28 to 30, your productivity is going to be anyone's in the world. That's the odd thing about what's going on in this world. So, anyway... there's another. No, go ahead. No. That's exactly the kind of idea that I want to get to you. Is that it looks like sometimes this valuation principle wouldn't hold, but it does. However, it doesn't mean that the whole world is like this, because many markets are not perfectly competitive. Perfectly competitive, which is what the valuation principle assumes. A lot of markets are, but some markets are not perfectly competitive. And that's one of the things where you need to find a defined skill set that is not competitive. In other words, something that is not everyone can do this. And that's one of the reasons you're in college, and that's one of the reasons that we encourage you to do something in college where you get skill sets that are uncommon. Quantitative skills, language skills, those kinds of things. Creativity to a certain extent. We're business people. We're not all that creative. Okay. I'm so creative. You wouldn't believe it. I can make financial statements that people say, oh, that was very creative, right before they call the feds. Let me give you the other principle here. Now, this one's, I'm just going to write the name of it. It's called the law of one price. It actually doesn't mean one price, because there are things that I need to talk to you about that run into this a little bit. The law of one price says that in a competitive market, here's that assumption again, in a competitive market, an asset will have one price everywhere. The price of an asset will be uniform. In a competitive market, the price of an asset will be uniform. In other words, if it's the same thing, it will have the same price anywhere that the market is competitive. There won't be different prices for it unless there is some defect in the market. Now you're saying, well, the price of something over there is going to be cheaper than it is here. The price of, I don't know if you know this, the price of drugs that are insanely expensive in the United States, pharmaceuticals, they are quite a bit cheaper, even up in Canada, down in Mexico, in Europe. So you might say, well, clearly the law of one price doesn't hold. Well, yeah, it does, because those are not competitive markets. Those are highly, highly concentrated markets. Protected markets in the United States by law, by the marketing strategies of the companies, and by the sheer few of those companies there are here dealing in those pharmaceuticals. So the law of one price isn't applicable in a market like that, because it's not a competitive market. But if it is a competitive market, like a market for stocks or other securities, like a market for metals, commodities, gold, silver, platinum, there will be one price everywhere in the world. The deviation, you might actually see some slight deviations from one. That's why I put the scare quotes around one. It might be that in some places, transactions costs are slightly higher. It might be that there are slight delays in communicating the prevailing price. There are ways that prices can be slightly off kilter from one another. If you drive down the road and see all these gas stations, you'll see that the prices are actually pretty uniform. They might deviate by a penny or two a gallon from one station to the other. But for the most part, the retail gas market is highly competitive. And therefore, you're going to see the law of one price as you go down the road. Now, if you say, well, I saw the price of gas was this on this side of town, and over on that side of town, it was this. Well, that would simply mean that there was a different structure of demand, possibly supply, but most likely demand on one side of town versus the other. But within a competitive sphere, you'll see a law of one price hold pretty well. That's the true of gold and all those kinds of things. There is a single price. Well, you'll say, well, I sold some gold and I didn't get the price that I saw. No, because there was a transactions cost involved. There was something going on the underlying price was the same, but there was some defect in the in your ability to sell it to the people without the middlemen involved. And that's one thing that can also cause appearances of a deviation from the law of one price, is when there are middlemen involved. They can sometimes jockey against, take advantage of people who are desperate for money. Okay, down to the basic principle. There's a formula. There are actually several different present value, future value formulas. The basic formula, which you would do on a calculator, because there are finance apps, and I'm going to show you how to use finance apps. But this one, it's better just to use the calculator's scientific features to do it. The future value of a lump sum of money, and here this is valuing a lump sum, a single amount of money, a single amount of money. Its future value will be its present value, its price value now, times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. Here, this is the periodic interest rate. And I'll explain that in a minute. And the exponent t is the number of periods involved. So let me explain this. Compounding can change the number that you put in there. So for example, if I said that the opportunity cost of this lump sum of money is, let's say, 12%. The APR is 12%. I would use a 12% there. And let's say that it was, 5 years. If I said compounding was annual, the R would be 0.12 and the T would be 5. That's what I would put in the formula. If I saw that the compounding was going to be done semi-annually, the R would be 0.06 and the T would be 10. Because in semi-annual is twice a year, so 5 years would be 10 periods. And if it's twice a year, then the periodic interest rate is 6%, not 12%. If I said that it was quarterly, then the APR, then the R that I would put in there would be 0.03, and the T would be 5 times 4, 20. Yeah.
So, getting back to what the gentleman down there reports, what if it's money at no interest? What if it's $100 today or $100 in 5 years? Then you've got 1 raised to the power of T, it's still 1.
Uh-huh.
So why is the present value greater?
Well, if there's no interest rate, then there's no growth of the money.
Right.
And that means that the present value would equal the future value.
So but you're never. $100 now, $100 in 10 years.
Say that again? Yeah. But there's never going to be a time when the interest rate is zero. Never. Not in our capitalist system. Now, interestingly enough, there was some discussion a few years back. It was a question that was asked by one of the associate deans at the time, or maybe it was the dean. No, it was the interim dean, said, should we be teaching alternate finance systems other than the one that is traditional? And, well, there was kind of like this grumble, grumble, no, no. And I, well, for example, in Islamic finance, there are no interest rates. That is forbidden in the Quran. The Prophet said, you don't do that. So most academics in the capitalist mindset say, well, there really is, but it's hidden somewhere. they don't get it. There is not. It's a very different system. And I said, let's go for it. But be prepared for what the consequences are. Because if you're going to have me teach Islamic finance with capitalism, I'm also going to teach communist finance with capitalism. I'm also going to teach binary finance. You're not going to like the result because these kids will go out there and they'll be all weird. And no one will hire them because they know too much. Fortunately, the conversation died. But so do recognize. I'm actually glad you brought that up because there really are systems of finance that do not have some of our core concepts in them. And it's not what a lot of capitalist finance people say. Well, it's the same as ours. They're just hiding it. No, it's not. It not really isn't the same. It is a very different system. And there are also systems that have some really weird twists in them, like Jubilee. Jubilee is in the Hebrew tradition is a year every very long period when all debts are wiped out. That makes for some really interesting financial concepts in and of itself. I personally approve of that one, but we can't get anyone to go along with that one here. Okay, now, monthly, the periodic interest rate would be 0.01, 12 times, and the T would be 60 months. That's all there is to it. Just don't forget. And also, if it's a complicated division, put it in the full calculator. Don't calculate it and write it down and then key it back in because you're going to get rounding error doing that. So if here's one, weekly. Now, I need to point out something here. Would be 0.12 divided by how many weeks are in a year?
56.
52. I made the mistake once of saying weekly on an exam. I had quite a few students come up to me, how many weeks are in a year? So if you were to have one like that, you would just do 1 plus 0.12 divided by 52 on your calculator. Don't try to figure it out, then copy it down because you get into rounding error doing that. Similarly with the T, if the calculation is a big number, just put that exponent in parentheses and do whatever is necessary to get the number of periods involved, okay? But anyway, and the T in this case would be 52 times 5. That's how many weeks would be in 5 years. Other than that, it's just a straightforward calculation. Do one quickly. You put $5,000 in a savings account that pays 6.2% compounded quarterly. You're not going to see that right now in this interest rate environment. Now, someday we'll be back up there to those nice interest rates, but not for a while. How much will you have? Will you have in the account in 15 years? How much will you have in the account in 15 years? Now, this is one where just key the numbers in. Don't forget, here's one thing I caution you about. First thing, whenever I state an interest rate, it will be an annual interest rate, okay, or an annualized. If I know an interest rate, a 3-year interest rate, I am going to immediately state that as whatever it is on an annual basis. So this is always going to be an APR, an annual percentage rate. Okay? Now, as far as the rest of this goes, I should have pulled this up before now. Bear with me one moment while I get myself... I want to pull up the TI-83. Now, as I said, there is a finance app on the 83-84 that is just outstanding for doing financial calculations. It's overkill for something like this because this is just a formula. And if I am fortunate, let me see if it's still here or if they deleted it. Yep, they deleted it. So I'm going to have to get it back again. Hang on here. Bear with me. I'm going to show you this in case you don't know. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I've done that too many times now. TI-83 emulator. Now, the one that's probably the best place to go to Google Sites and download the calculator. It's a virtual TI calculator. And then you'll extract the files from it and run the thing. Really? This should happen. Bear with me. They deleted the one that I had, I thought. Okay, there it is. Thank you. Okay. Let me get all this out of the way, this distraction here. Is how many windows did I open there? Okay, now, there's the calculator right there. Now, all I'm going to do is I'm just going to stream this through. First, let me write it on the board, what I just did here. As the formula for this problem would be 5,000. The future value of the money is going to be 5,000 times 1 plus 0.062 divided by, it's quarterly, so that's 4, to the 4 times 15. That's all there is to it. And don't forget your parentheses because you'll be very sad if you do. Okay, now I'm going to clear it and I'm just going to put in the 5,000 times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.062 divided by, that was quarterly, 4, close the parenthesis, to the open parenthesis, 15 times 4, close the parenthesis. Now, I don't know if, I think you probably already know this. You can't do these kinds of calculations on a BA2 calculator or a business calculator in general because for some odd reason, since time immemorial, those calculators don't recognize hierarchy of operation of arithmetic operations. They don't know that multiplications come before additions, exponents come before everything. They don't know that. So if you try this on a BA2, which is a business calculator, you'll get the wrong answer. But on this is a scientific, and it says equals $12,582.46. So the answer is $12,582.46. You more than doubled your money. Now, here's something that's important. Keep this in mind. Finance calculations almost always either give you the right answer or give you a completely wrong answer. And you can pretty much tell, yeah, that looks about right, it probably is right. Otherwise, you would get something that was tiny pennies or something in the millions of dollars. There was a story you're going to see in the next lecture. I'll show you how to calculate loan payments. So I had my students on this exam calculate their car payments on an 18 grand car. This one student got a monthly payment of something like $10,000. And I said, she asked me, well, how did I get that wrong? I said, well, first of all, does that even make sense to you? She said, I don't know. My dad pays my car payments. No, come on. It will either kind of make sense or it will be completely whacked. Now, here's the trick. A lot of times, what we really care about is, okay, how do we bring a future value of money back to the present? So let's try the formula. Let me turn this formula around. If I turn this formula around, the present value is the future value, the future value over 1 plus r to the t power. A better way of calculating that, which will kind of keep you from making a mistake in the divided denominators, is to write it as the future value times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the negative t power. Remember that a negative exponent is the same as the reciprocal of the positive exponent. So using it straight line as a multiplication and then powering up to the negative is probably better, because you can sometimes, especially if the formula gets a little hairy, you can forget to put in a parenthesis or something like that, and then it blows up on you. Denominators arithmetically can do that. You can do that accidentally. So I would recommend that you use it like this. Now let's try this. You will receive $10,000 in 8 years. How much would you accept right now instead if the appropriate APR is 5.25% compounded weekly? In other words, what I'm saying here, you could, if you had money now, you could put it into an account that earned 5.25% compounded weekly. So what would you take now instead of $10,000 if you could do that with your money? That doesn't mean you will, but that's your opportunity cost. Well, in this case, what I would do is I would say the present value is going to be that future value times 1 plus 0.0525 over 52 to the negative 52 times 10 years. Did I say 10 years? No, 8 years. I'm sorry, 8 years. 8 years. Really, the most likely thing that's going to happen is the formula isn't that hard. It's just that you might key it in the calculator error, make a mistake in the keying it in. Why does that calculator turn off? Do you see that? Yeah, right. Really? Hey. That's annoying. It's on a computer. I don't need to worry about it running out of battery. Okay. Anyway, sorry. 10,000 times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 52, close the parenthesis, powered up to the, open parenthesis, negative 52 times 8, close the parenthesis, equals $6,571.86. There is your present value. That's how much $10,000 in 8 years is worth now at this APR with the compounding. In other words, we see just a basic principle of finance. Now money, I will take less now than I would in the future simply because if I get the money now, I can use it now. Invest it, but I don't have to. I can actually enjoy it. Whatever, now money is worth less than future money. That's why we have in our system of economics and finance and projects, there is a bias. If I look at time, present value, over time, the same amount of money is worth less now. So if this were like $1,000, it's worth $1,000 right now. But if that's $1,000 in 5 years, it's worth less. In 10 years, it's worth less. In 20 years, it's worth even less. It decays in present value. That makes it so that we tend to attenuate to projects that have more money close in. Long, long haul projects are a lot more challenging to accept because the payoff in present dollars is so little. So we would go for projects 3, 5, 7 years. A lot more likely than we would projects that are 20, 30, 40 years out. That's why the projects have to be hugely profitable way out there to overcome that decay of their value as we bring them back to the present to decide whether to do them or not. You're actually, in your lifetime, seeing some pretty impressive examples of that. For example, in your lifetimes, we will be mining asteroids. There's no doubt about that. However, it's going to be 30 years before we do that. Realistically, maybe a little longer. But we'll get a math. But the only reason that we're now contemplating is because the payoff will be so insanely massive once we're doing it. Smaller projects, we are not going to really invest in those all that much simply because they are so far out there in the future that their payoff just isn't worth anything now. That is where we have to find ways to really monetize some things, like space travel. How are we going to do things that have such minimal payoffs? Well, we commercialize it. We sell it to rich people. We put up the hotels up in near-Earth orbit. We put all of the, start with the casinos, stuff like that. That will attract the filthy rich people in a relatively short amount of time. That will give us breathing room to put the long haulers out there on the colonies and all of that. So we have to figure out how to monetize short so that we can benefit long. That's the problem with you, young people, is in our capitalist system in the United States, when you're a child, your value to the society is way out there, and there are a lot of people who would calculate that as being not worth very much at the time a decision is made to invest in you as a child, in your schooling, in your health. Anyway, that is the time value of money in a nutshell. And then we go and just do a simple project. I've done this one before, and I'm going to have to do it again to someone in here. sir, your loved one, your betrothed, your wifey, has said, I'm going to have a baby. And of course, you lovingly say, respond, the hell you say. No, you know it's yours. Even ugly in the womb. But now, fear sets in. And so I come up to you. I am the God of money. I approach you as the birth of the child nears. You see that you're asleep, and you see this light shine on the wall. And then you hear a chorus of angels. Hosanna. And I come out of the mist. My son.
Oh, you fixed your hair to come out. That's good.
No, no, I've got to look like the rabbi, for God's sake. You're going to need money for the child's college. It will cost that child to go to Harvard $250,000 in 18 years. How much doth thou want now?
You do that in my head?
Well, you know, we're not expecting miracles. Okay?
250 grand in 18 years?
Yeah, we can
do
it.
The annual
we can do it. You can get it into a APR of 4.99%. Compounded quarterly. You have got to do this fast. Fortunately, you keep your calculator by your bedside. Okay? I mean, some guys keep a gun. If a robber comes into your house, you whip out that calculator. Back off, son. I'm a finance person. And they will run. Because this wasn't the finance gang that broke in. It was the accounting gang. Now, you're going to just 250 grand is what you want in the bank to, so you can give Harvard the money right there and say, please, please watch him because I don't want to see him anymore. Well, let's see. Well, if we're going to do a present value, it would be $250,000 in future value times 1 plus 0.0499, this is quarterly, over 4 to the negative 4 times. And you're going to let that ride for the 18 years that the child is growing up. We can actually figure it out now what that's going to need to be. It turned off again. Do you see that? You're interrupting my annoyance. Okay. $250,000 divided by, open the parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0499 divided by 4. Close the parenthesis, raise it to the power, open the parenthesis, put your negative sign in, 4 times 18.
Divide by any.
Huh? No. What did I do? Did I screw? Oh, I. Okay, hang on. Oh, well, let me clear it. I did put in the wrong one. 250,000, thank you. Times, open the parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0499 divided by 4. Close the parenthesis, raise it to the power, open parenthesis, negative 4 times 18 years. Close the parenthesis. $102,392.89. $89. Now, one thing, of course, is that if you had been able to invest at a higher rate, you would have gotten a smaller number. If you invested a lower rate, this would have been a bigger number. But as it stands now, what this is telling you is that you could, if you were to ask me, now that you've done the calculation, I need $102,392.89. I will simply say to you, are you nuts? No! He's going to not go to Harvard. He'll go someplace cheaper. ISU. Or if that doesn't work out, Heartland Community College. Okay? But one way or the other, your child will become educated. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.